Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
All right, we're going to be talking about the top 100 trades as reported by Diamond for January 2008. With me, as always, is Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, John. It's good to be here again.
Cool. Now, this is ironically both the longest it's taken from the time the data has been initially released and kind of the quickest since the data has been released for us to sit down and podcast about this. And what happened was Diamond released the data back about 2-3 weeks ago, and there were some anomalies. Most notably, there were some items from February on the comic side that definitely made the list, and a few other things that just when you started, or when I and most of the other guys who analyzed this data on a monthly basis started to look at it, were like, this is wrong. And there were a couple of different theories that various people had posted over on the beat as to what was wrong and how. But the bottom line is it was sufficiently incorrect that Diamond released an updated set of data, and that came out earlier this week when we're recording, so just that this past Monday.
What was the big red flags that like we looked at it and caught you like, hey, that can't be right?
Well, I had kicked it through my number crunching process, and I do a lot of this automated because I'm way too lazy to pull out the abacus and do it by hand. And when I noticed the 93 or 94% drop on Amazing Spider-Man, I thought to myself, you know, I know it, there's been some negative backlash on that title, but not that much. And it was clear that the issue that had that quote-unquote drop, it wasn't a drop. It was like reorder activity for an issue that came out in February. And so there were a couple of things like that. A lot of items seemed to go up, which I, of course, saw as a red flag because as anyone who's familiar with my analysis knows, things don't go up. I mean, yes, some stuff does, but usually it's in that 10% of the list range, whereas this time it was significantly higher, like, 100 items had gone up in sales. And it's like, statistically speaking, that's not likely. And as was the case, it was not true. So it's one of those that it's more the sales trends were what pointed out the fact that it was incorrect, just looking at the unlocked numbers. Because, of course, and by unlocked, what I mean is, and I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again, because it's important information. When Diamond releases the list, they do it in terms of an order index value. Everything is listed in relationship to one single item on the list. Normally, that's Batman. If Batman doesn't ship, it's Detective. It doesn't matter what it is. It basically turns the list into a huge algebraic equation where you're solving for X, and X is the sales of one particular item on the list. Now, John Jackson Miller has gone on record as saying that when he went through the math to solve for X, that it seemed to be the items from the first week were close, although not quite on the money. The items from the next week were off by like an additional 2%, and then the next week off by another 2%, and that the variance grew the later in the month the item came out. So, you know, having compared the list of the two lists, the original list and the new list, it's really unclear to me what happened inside of Diamond to make this level of mistake. Because, like on the trades list, the number one and number two item flipped. You know, originally it had been listed as Ultimate X-Men trade paperback volume 17, with the Savage Sword of Conan's first trade being in second place. With the revised list, Savage Sword of Conan came out on top. So it's...
Well, looking at their estimated sales, I could, you know, they're only off by just under 200 units anyway.
Right.
So,
but I mean, the Hulk Premier hardcover, the end, that one shot up like 16 ranks.
Really?
Yeah. And there was one that dropped substantially. The Shadow Pact second trade paperback dropped, I believe, 38 ranks from rank 23 to rank 61.
Hmm.
So it's not just a matter of some additional sales were counted in and it had to be taken out. There were a few other things going on, and I'm unclear what those other things were. Now, on the comic side, and I'm sure Bob and I will talk about it when we record this weekend in more detail on this, but they merged a couple items that hadn't been merged, and in this month, what happened, oh, not this month, but, you know, this case or whatever, there were, let's see, it was the Hulk number one Phoenix convention variant that had been listed as a separate item that got merged into the Hulk number one, and it displaced Amazing Spider-Man number 546 from being the number one to being the number two slot.
Huh.
So on both the comics and the trades list, we had a change in who the top or what the top item was, which, you know, I find fairly interesting. Now, I've spent the majority of my career working in information systems departments, doing reporting, doing data analysis, doing that kind of stuff for large companies. I used to work at Northern Telecom, which is a multinational company. I used to work at a company called Wavetech, again, another multinational, although nowhere near as big as Northern Telecom. Now, Diamond is certainly not this monolithic entity in terms of the grand scheme of corporate entities, although certainly for the comic industry it's fairly monolithic, although still small compared to Time Warner. But you've got to realize that Diamond has been cranking out these lists on a monthly basis for over 25 years. And this particular process, this manner of reporting things with an index value, even predates Diamond. Now, if you roll back the clock that 25-plus years, you don't have Excel, you don't have home computers, you don't have a lot of the things that we take for granted, and the entire process they used back then was fundamentally different than what they're using today. And since they've been having to do this on a month-in, month-out basis, they can't just overhaul the whole system lock, stock, and barrel necessarily. They may have been forced to make some small changes, and the process just kind of grew organically over time to whatever it is today. Now, I can tell you with reasonable certainty, or at least as much certainty as somebody outside of Diamond with no visibility into the process, that there is a manual component to this every month. At the very least, the way they abbreviate the publishers seems to be done manually. Because one of the things that really surprised me and kind of messed up my numbers initially before I corrected it, was they had reported all the IDW items in the original version of the list with the three-letter vendor code of IDW, as one might expect. However, in the corrected list, or the updated revised list, it was IDE, for Idea Design Works, or whatever, the first three characters.
Oh, I see.
Now, if it's an automated process, that really ought not to change. So I think it's fairly clear to me that there's a high likelihood that this is not just a matter of somebody at Diamond pressing a button, out comes the report, and it goes on email. That they're having to manually massage the data, they're having to abbreviate titles and things of that nature, which is unfortunate, and, you know, I'm sure that the person having to do the process, if that is indeed what's happening, probably wishes it wasn't that way, but, I mean...
Well, one thing that throws me, and they just started doing this in their previous order codes, is when they would list the Marvel Masterworks, and they would abbreviate that. They used to say Marvel Masterworks written out, and then they started abbreviating it MMW.
Yeah.
And that was just a few months ago they started doing that, to my recollection. And that really threw me, because I had to go through my data when I do my lists and everything, and I had to, you know, do a search and replace kind of thing, and anything MMW that was capitalized, they had to replace it with the words Marvel Masterworks.
I have a... What I do when I get the Diamond list is I take it out of their format and put it into an Excel structure that I'm comfortable with. I then have that compare... another Excel file I open up, reference the new worksheet and the thing, and have it scrub the data. I have it replace ampersands with ands. I have it replace, you know, everything that I think needs to be replaced and standardize those title names, because I then can compare based on the title and in the case of trades, the volume number, in the case of comics, the issue number. That's how I get the comparison to the previous issue.
Mm.
And when, like, the IDW to IDE changed, suddenly I had Angel After the Fall shooting up, you know, almost 300%. It's like, no, that's not right. But if you look on this particular list, I'm looking at the before and after. Grifter and Midnighter trade paperback originally had the word and. It got on the revised list where it has an ampersand.
Mm-hmm.
And not a big deal, but when you're going on a text-based comparison,
right,
it can really mess stuff up. Let's see, there are a few others that had that happen. So it's...
Well, for me, it's more formatting when I do my release schedule. I mean, you know, some companies write out the word hardcover, and I replace that with HC. Some people do TP for trade paperback. Some do TPB for trade paperback. And for me, it's like I'm kind of anal about that, and I'll go through and replace everything to the format that I want it to be. And that could be, it can be time consuming for me, especially when I do it on a daily basis.
Well, again, that's why I put together an automated process, because I have
I'm not that smart.
Well, but my entire comparison process fails if it's not consistent.
Right, exactly.
You know, I can't compare the second volume of a trade to the first volume if they have different names and therefore theoretically are different titles.
Right.
You know, that inconsistency is a huge problem. And, you know, it looks like, do they leave the word the in or not? Maybe a manual mm-hmm. process. Do they change things like of the to an O/T or just an O/?
That's right. Yeah, that's another thing.
So, I mean, this is stuff that if I knew for certain was a manual process for them that they're doing against an Excel file or something, I would freely offer up either the solution I've got, or I would write one custom for them to where they don't have to have somebody spending their time every month doing that. It would result in more consistent data and better time usage for the people at Diamond. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it would make my life easier. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not going to claim to be completely altruistic on this. But I was surprised by some of the changes in the data from the original to the revised list. I knew there had to be a manual component in there, but it just, again, I was surprised how much it was,
mm-hmm.
or at least how much the data changed, whether it's manual or not. Like the black dossier for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen wasn't originally tagged as mature readers. In the revised list, it is. It's like the content's the same. It should have been however it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is me being a bit of a data junkie and certainly a hardcore information systems professional. You want the data to be consistent. You want the process to be as automated as practical, given the time and budget constraints, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was a bit flabbergasted by how much the data changed, not just again in the descriptions, but like we were talking earlier, the rankings. Something seriously went wrong in their process, and, you know, the data went out incorrect. Now, in Diamond's defense, this doesn't happen all that often.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there'll be an item got, you know, a decimal point off or something fairly obvious, or, you know, a few minor things like that. Nothing. I would be hard pressed to name anything within the last 5-6 years that came close to this level of discrepancy that required oh crap, we've got to completely redo the list. Now there was the item or the issue with last year's totals bestsellers for the year, that there were about 9 items that were ranked incorrectly that I spotted and that they later corrected. But that's 9 items compared to, you know, the massive changes in the list this month. So the fact they normally get it right every month is something they should be commended for. Every process, sooner or later, something's going to go wrong. So,
mm-hmm.
But definitely made for a lot more number crunching on everybody's part who's analyzing the data this time around. And, of course, you know, the February numbers are probably going to get released in about a week.
It's like, that's soon, eh?
I think so. Maybe, I mean, it's usually second or third week of the month that the stuff comes out. So, you know, we're going to be recording this a little later in the process next month just because I'm going to be in Japan at the end of March.
Right.
But it's like, you know, I just finished this. Do we have to start again?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So it was interesting. But actually, looking at the numbers for January, it was kind of interesting. On the trade side, the split was pretty much, you know, kind of sort of how we expect, with about 2/3 going to Marvel and DC aggregate and the other 1/3 going to the indies. What was interesting this time was Marvel came out with a little under 40%. They had 39.64% of the units for the top 100 trades, whereas DC only had 23.76% of the aggregate units for the top trades. So DC did not have as strong of a month compared to Marvel, and again, a lot more of that shifted towards Marvel, whereas normally I think we have you know, again, on average, certainly we've had other months where Marvel is doing gangbusters, but on average, it seems to be a rough three-way tie, Marvel, DC, everybody else. Now, what's interesting this month in the everybody else category is Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. Dark Horse had 12 new items, one reorder item, for a total of 13, and they had 18.35% of the total units for the top 100 trades. That's an astounding percentage of the pie for any publisher other than a Marvel or DC. Now, I didn't have time to check to see if that's like a record high or something, either for Dark Horse or, you know, for other publishers in general. I don't think it is. Dark Horse has had a couple of strong months in 2007, but it certainly was noticeable for them to do that well. Let's see, is there anything else on the breakdown of the percentage of units and dollars that looks interesting? And, I mean, we've got the usual couple of titles, or not titles, couple of publishers that doing the half a percent, a couple doing the 1-2%. You know, it's the usual basic ordering. You got the Marvel, the DC, the Dark Horse, the Image, IDW. It's interesting because Viz and Tokyo Pop placed a little lower than I think they normally do. Normally they have a lot stronger of a presence, and I think part of it is we've had a large number of months where we'll have three Naruto trades coming out on a particular week of the month for Viz. It is Viz who does that, right?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
Not a single Naruto volume this month.
What about the comparison between Image and IDW this month? I mean, IDW's got three items and no reorder items, where Image has a total of six, and that is split between new items and reorder items. They both have three. But as far as their percentage goes, they're very close. I mean, is Image losing ground? I mean, are these all Robert Kirkman titles again, like we always talk about? Or, I mean, from what I've seen the past, you know, few months, just eyeing them, IDW is really coming on strong with their title, I think.
I think they're doing some interesting stuff. They've got the Star Trek stuff coming up, right?
Mm-hmm. That's year four, yeah.
That's looking very interesting. I'm planning on getting a couple of them, and I've been looking at some of the solicits, and I may start picking up a few others. I think they certainly seem to be gaining some momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at the Image titles for this month, the top one is Wanted. Well, gee, there's that upcoming movie that they've just, you know, put the trailer out for, so that's not surprising that it came in.
I've got the trade paperback right next to me right now, which is actually a Topco imprint, by the way.
Right. Now, where do you think that ranked on the list? You know, upcoming movie, it's a popular miniseries.
Well, they did do the Wanted, and it was late. I mean, it's...
Yeah, granted.
I mean, we knew it was coming up. They did the Wanted movie premiere, you know, trailer during the Super Bowl. That was in February. I wanted to think about that, but...
Now, keep in mind that this is reorder activity, so we don't expect it to top the list. But it came in at rank 74.
Yeah.
This is one that, as the movie gets closer, as the advertising blitz starts happening for that, I think is going to potentially go higher and higher on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once that movie comes out, depending how it does, it may stick around. It may suddenly vanish back into the ether.
Mm-hmm.
So, because this is only the second time, I believe, it's been on the list. It'll, again, be fun to watch how the movie does to support that title.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's see. The other ones for Image this month, we had Casanova's first volume, Walking Dead's first volume, the third volume of Bomb Queen, the seventh volume of Walking Dead, and the third volume of Madman. All of those are trade paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the reorder activity for Image, it was Wanted and two volumes of Walking Dead. And let's see how just the original items for Image, the original releases, that Madman Volume 3, Bomb Queen Volume 3, and Casanova.
Yeah, Casanova, yeah.
That only totals up to 3,936 units. So as far as new material goes for Image, definitely it was a weak month. You know, mm-hmm. That's half what the opening numbers are for a Walking Dead trade these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a matter of Image so much losing ground or becoming weaker or anything of the sort. I think it's just a matter of what came out in January.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have any item that really came out, you know, that was a high visibility, a strong, you know, sales-wise, a strong item. I mean, Casanova certainly has a following, certainly has a lot of buzz, but it did, you know, 1,404 units, and that's... Actually, that one might be reorder activity. I don't have a first ship date for that, but it was solicited. No, it was solicited in October. Everything else is September, October. That may be new. I don't follow Casanova, so I might be wrong on that. But, you know, IDW's top trade, which was the 30 Days of Night, Volume 8, Red Snow trade paperback, that alone did 2,539 units. And that's, again, an estimated number.
And I'm sure that helped. That got a bump from the movie that came out in late October.
Yeah.
And then the Transformers Animated, which is now on TV, which I haven't gotten a chance to watch yet.
Oh, I hadn't realized they had a new cartoon. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, it's based in Detroit. The cartoon is set in Detroit, yeah.
That's cool.
And then the Complete Terry and the Pirates, Volume 2, of I think 4 volumes that is going to top out at.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, this was not a particularly strong month for Image. IDW, I think, you know, did pretty well, though. Because, I mean, they're in terms of their lineup of titles, they're not as big as Image. Image just has...
Well, it's very eclectic. With horror titles and then movie franchises and then classic comic strips from the Golden Age. I mean, it's very, very different.
Yeah, very diverse.
But that's good. I think Chris Rial and everybody over there at IDW is doing some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm really curious how the Star Trek stuff's going to do for them.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really checked that on the monthly comic side, but when did those start coming out? I guess some of them have been coming out for a while.
Yeah, they have, I believe.
Issue 6 of Star Trek Year 4 is out, as is the Next Gen Intelligence Gathering first issue, and then they've got the Alien Spotlight on the Borg. So they've got quite a few.
The Year 4 trade paperback just came out this week.
It'll be fun to see how that does in the trade, because on the monthly side, issue 6 did 9,789 units, and that's pretty good. So let's see how that's trending. And that's...
I had a chance to read one of the issues when I was in the comic book shop a while back, and just comparing it to, and I kind of blogged about this the other day too, just comparing it to the Gold Key stuff that came out, because the Gold Key stuff could be considered year 4 and year 5. I mean, it came out in that, you know, late 1960s when the TV show was still on.
Right.
Or ending, really. And so that kind of took over the saga of the Enterprise. And I don't know. I mean, as much as I like the Year 4 stuff, I think I like the Gold Key stuff better. I just think there was a little more imagination back then with the storytelling. And then that, you know, crossed over into the animated series.
Yeah, I was going to say, the animated series I thought was the official fourth year.
That could have been the official fourth year. Yeah, yeah. Well, then that, I mean, we can go into all that, but that was supposed to be Star Trek Phase 2, the TV show.
Yeah.
That was going to come out 74, 75, which... You got canceled, and then the animated series, and then they had everybody all together anyway, and then they went into the motion picture.
Well, I thought Star Trek II, the TV series, basically was an on-again, off-again thing and flipped into the movie.
It did flip into the movie. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It just seems like
what's interesting, do you have the motion picture on DVD?
I don't know, actually.
The special edition DVD, you know, there's supposed to be a Vulcan on Star Trek Phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vulcan character actually is in the motion picture, and he's the dude that gets fried in the transporter.
Really?
He was supposed to be the new Vulcan.
That's
new
right.
Vulcan
I remember that.
Officer.
Yeah.
He gets fried. That was the actual guy who was going to be the Vulcan on Star Trek Phase 2. And that's how they kind of brought him into the movie, but yet didn't use his character kind of thing. They kind of explained that in the director's voiceover on the movie, on the DVD.
Man, that's got to suck for an actor.
I know. Doesn't it suck?
I was going to be the next Spock.
You know, the next Spock. Right. Not so fast.
That's funny.
So what else do you want to talk about? You just want to move around the list?
Yeah, let's just bounce around a little. We usually go through the top 10, and frankly, I think that gets a little boring, at least for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the top 10 is pretty much standard, you know. It is what it is this month, I think.
Yeah, we talked about Savage Sword of Conan taking the top spot for Dark Horse. Now, what's interesting is it did that with 6,212 units. Mm-hmm. And last month, the high item was again around the, I think, 6,018 units or something.
Mm-hmm.
So within the opening number, you know, or within the direct market as reported by Diamond, in there are some months where it doesn't take a whole lot to top the trades list. Now, I don't say that to diminish anything, because, I mean, 6,200 for, you know, trade is still, you know, not bad, but it's very different than the months where we're having, you know, the 20, 25,000 range. And I just want to mention that difference in scale of this list compared to the comics list, because a lot of people, you know, seem to think that, you know, it would be a good thing for the industry to move to a trade paperback-centric model. Now, I think it's inevitable that they will, but I look at these sales figures, and that 6,212 that the top slot on the trades list took would have ranked at 213 on the comics list. So there's a lot more people reading comics than seem to be reading trades, at least so far as the initial numbers go. Now, flip side, you look at A Walking Dead, and that first volume that we were just talking about that was on the list, its total known sales are at 65,192 units, and that's just what has been reported on the monthly lists. I think if I were to do a little digging, I could probably justify additional copies on top of that.
I think that an interesting book that kind of caught my eye was, I mean, we're kind of looking at the top books, but at number 14, the final Grant Morrison Doom Patrol book is there, The Planet Love, which is volume 6. There's still a lot of love for the classic Doom Patrol, I guess.
That is interesting. There's a lot of reorder activity showing up. I mean, one of the reasons I think they need to really extend the depth of the top trades list is when you've got Walking Dead's first volume coming back every so often, if not all the time. Watchmen showed up yet again, this time in rank 32. It showed up on the list every month last year. And again, upcoming movie, and it's a classic, so not surprising. But there was a total of how many total reorders this month? There were 20 reorders this month on the list. That's a fifth of the list. So, you know, you take that in combination with the Masterworks, the Essentials, and the Showcases, the Visionaries, and the Omnibuses that are taking older classic material, and there's a very strong presence of that older material. I mean, you look down at rank 23, you got the second volume of Next Wave Agents of Hate, and I mean that series has been over for quite some time, so it's not just the we finished publishing it, let's quickly kick out the collected edition that's selling. This is really showing that there is some longevity to the material, which I think is good.
What else did you want to cover?
Let's see, we've got the Buffy the Vampire Slayer Long Way Home trade showing up yet again down at rank 51. That's showing a lot of strength for that franchise. And then also up at volume at rank number 3 is the third volume of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer Omnibus. So I think it's really no surprise. Again, Buffy's a strong property. It's doing very well for Dark Horse. Now, the one thing I find interesting is we were talking about how it was not a particularly strong month for DC on the trade side. The top-ranked trade they have is the Pride of Baghdad soft cover at about 4,573 units, which is kind of soft opening numbers, but, you know, it had the hardcover way back when, and as I recall, that did fairly well. But I don't have that number in front of me at the moment, so I don't know exactly how well it did. But you take that, and then the next thing you have for DC, and the only other thing before that Doom Patrol we were just talking about, is Batman the Man Who Laughs, which is a reprinting of the issues of Detective Comics, of a murder mystery tale that had Alan Scott.
And the graphic novel. The Man Who Laughs, Ed Brubaker these days, is automatically going to get a hardcover.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way. It would not have occurred to me if I were at DC to take a couple issues of Detective, toss it in with an old graphic novel / prestige format book, and slap it into a hardcover. But I lack vision, I guess.
Right. I don't recall ever reading The Man Who Laughs.
I read it. I don't recall it.
It was something to do with Year One. Wasn't it like when Joker and Batman meet up after Miller's Year One?
I think so. It may have even been... I'm trying to think if that had the Red Hood in it. If it was kind of him going from the Red Hood to the Joker or not.
Could have been. Should pick this book up. I'll find out.
I've got the graphic novel. I read it when it came out, but that was whenever it came out years ago. Yeah, that's part of what gets me on some of the older stuff here, is it's been so long since I read it that my recollection of the events in it, not what it should be.
Yeah. It was first released in February of 2005.
Okay.
So, quite recent, actually.
Yeah, relatively recent. For me, that's still, 5,000, 6,000 comics ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So let's skim through here, see if there's anything particularly interesting. We've got a couple of showcases. We've got the first volume of Robin, the second volume of Aquaman. Those did all right. The Robin one did about a little over 2,900 units. The Aquaman one did a little over 2,500 units.
Now, I think it's interesting that Marvel is, looks like they're putting the fast track on the Essential Power Man and Iron Fist. Again, Iron Fist tying into the Brubaker run and Luke Cage tying into his adventures right now. He's pretty prominent in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, over in New Avengers.
In fact, you just talked to him. No, you didn't. That was a different podcast.
Well, we
Strike
talked
that.
A little about him in the House of M Avengers, where he's showing up.
That was it, yeah, yeah.
So he's definitely got a bit of a high profile these days over at Marvel.
He is, and this is what I want to bring up. Luke Cage, he's in those promotions of Who Do You Trust for the Skrull. I saw his picture, or his Skrull, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the Skrull version of him, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, yeah. So, and he was back into his 70s garb, which I thought was pretty funny, with the yellow shirt and the headband. That silver headband.
Well, it's funny because I would think the 70s version would be the non-Skrull version, and the new non-Tierra'd version is the one I would suspect as being Skrull.
A Tierra, is that what you call it?
Yeah, well, what the hell else is it? You put a red star on it, you take it off him, you put it on Wonder Woman, you're done, you know?
Well, you gotta flip it upside down if you're gonna put on Wonder Woman, because the point goes down, you know?
That's true. Still.
Put an eagle on his chest, too, while you're at it.
That would be funny. Now, the one thing that I find just hilarious on this list is down at rank 52, and that's the JLA Kid Amazo trade paperback. Now, it's sold 1,972 units, and this was what saw print as 5 issues of the JLA Classified series. Now, originally, it was supposed to be the JLA Kid Amazo hardcover. So,
oh, I think you're right about that, actually.
I'm reasonably certain I'm right about it. It even got solicited at one point. So for it to go to trade versus a hardcover, you know, is just funny. So, and then right below it at rank 53, they've got the JSA Presents Volume 2 Stars and Stripes. And that's some of Jeff Johns' early work over at DC, which I thought the series was pretty good. Not brilliant, but good. He's certainly grown a lot as a writer in the intervening years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that may have been his first major DC work.
I'm pretty sure it was.
I mean, like headlining his own title and everything.
I'm not even sure how much comics he'd done prior to that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure.
So it was certainly some of his early stuff.
He's a young man.
Yeah. And look where he's gone since. He's practically taken over the DC universe.
Now, what do you think about the... speaking of how collected editions tie into storylines in the monthly side, the Golden Age Daring Mystery going on, which is the characters who are in the ongoing series right now over at Marvel in the 12.
Was that ongoing, or is that just a 12-issue series?
Oh, a 12-issue series. 12-issue series. Might as well be.
I mean,
but that's how these, how Marvel and DC and these other companies are tying in to current books, and that gives them an allowance to reprint old material. And looking at the Daring Age, the Golden Age Daring Mystery stuff, you know, if they weren't bringing out the 12, they wouldn't be bringing out this book. It's not very good. These comics were bad for a reason, John.
Well,
you know,
I don't think they were
like
bad
classic
for...
America by Kirby and Simon.
No, true, but I don't think they were intentionally bad for a reason. I think they just didn't stand the test of time.
They have, right, but there's a reason for that, because I don't know. I'm just kind of down on Marvel Golden Age, I guess, but... Because I think the DC, I mean, DC pretty much had everybody that wasn't named Kirby or Simon.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people don't really appreciate the fact that when Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman are referred to as the Trinity, it's not any kind of really biblical allusions. It's the fact that those were the three that withstood going from the Golden Age to the Silver Age to the current age.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that didn't stop. Everything else, by and large, from the Golden Age didn't survive through the Silver Age.
Mm-mm.
You know, and again, a lot of the Golden Age Daring Mystery stuff that we're talking about with the characters from the 12, these are obscure, I don't want to say loser characters, but characters that never clicked with the audience then, and you know, who knows if they'll do it now.
Well, they could have clicked with the audience back then.
If they did, they would have survived longer, and we'd have a better idea who some of these characters were.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, maybe not all the readers out there, but I think there would be a contingent that remembered the good old days when so-and-so starred in their own book, versus, you know, this being essentially unearthed, you know, esoterica in the 12.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean, not everything's going to survive in the marketplace. It's just the nature of things. Let's see, what else do we got that looks interesting? I mean, part of this is it just gets to the point where it's been another 6 months. Let's kick out another Ms. Marvel trade paperback. It's cranking out through the machine, which I think is a bad thing for the industry long term.
Well, then we can get to, I mean, we were speaking before. I wanted to bring up the topic of, we know that everything is going to get collected. It's just a matter of what format.
Well, what format and how long do you have to wait?
Yeah.
Because if you look at rank 57, DC finally got around to the fourth volume of Manhunter. And that part's been over since before Amazon's attack, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So that took a while to do. They're doing the second volume of the Tangent stuff. That came out and ranked at slot 87. So sometimes you do have to wait a fair number of years for this stuff to hit the trade. But it's one of those things, if you're patient enough and you prefer the trade, it'll definitely come out and trade sooner or later. And I think that undercuts the need for a lot of people to get the monthly comics. So it's just, I mean, I know there are only so many resources, only so much they can afford to print every month, and only so much they think people are actually going to buy every month. Because I heard there was something like 3,300 trades released last year or something like that. I thought I was reading that over at ICV2. But
yeah, I thought I read that too, yeah.
A staggering number. And do we really need that many new products that are kind of, in theory, you know, perpetual sellers to some degree or another? And I use that term loosely because I realize that once the initial feeding frenzy for this second volume of Shadow Pact is taken care of, probably not going to be a whole lot of people chasing down that second volume, you know, in the long term. And I don't know. It's one of those things that I really don't think we need to be cranking out all these trades of everything. And flip side, there's no reason for a publisher not to do so, particularly with the newer material. It seems like it would cost them next to nothing to do so. And if you can make money and put an ISBN number on it and sell it on Amazon till hell freezes over, why wouldn't you? That's good business.
Well, there's that list. You know, I was kind of skeptical about that list when I saw it because it almost needs to be having like a breakdown of if these are all reprints that are coming out. It almost needs that there should be an extra column in their Excel spreadsheet that we could see stating what year the original comics came out. Because if you look at something like Terry and the Pirates, right, that have come out, and granted, that's come out before in trade form. But nowadays, in 2008, we've got the technology where you can, you know, I hate this term, but you can remaster some of these old comics and, you know, wash them through a Photoshop program and really bring out the details. I mean, that's what Gemstone and EC are doing with the EC archives. You know, they're taking these old books and they're recoloring them. And a lot of people are mad about that, but it's because they didn't have, you know, the $16 million color palette they had back in the 1950s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all they're doing. But we're at a point right now, like I said, technology, you know, can clean these old comics up and make them really, really nice and presentable like we've never seen them before. And, you know, when are we going to have another time to see the Peanuts being collected like this again? Probably another 100 years, maybe, when some other program is brought out. I mean, for a lot of these old Golden Age, whether it be comic strips or comic books, it's kind of a one and done deal. I don't see them ever going back and redoing the EC archives again for another 40, 50 years. So this may be the time to get it.
You know, it's funny because as you were saying all that, I was thinking, you know, I'd categorize the items on these lists, the trades, the graphic novels, the collected editions or hardbacks, whatever you want to call them, into four groups. There's the original graphic novels and trades. There's the manga, and I treat that as separate because it's one, not always original.
Right.
But then there's the Golden Age, the old school, you know, you're not going to get the originals of these unless you're really, really rich and really, really motivated to do so. The Terry and the Pirates, the Peanuts, the Marvel
Tracy
Masterworks.
Right, yeah.
You know, not just the comic strips, but the comic books too. There's some of these that it's just not practical to go after the originals. And then you've got this fourth group of, we've got it printed, we've got it in electronic format, we can throw it to the intern in the production department down the hall, have, you know, him slap a ISBN on the back, have somebody in the sales department determine if it's a trade or a hardcover or whatever, kick a solicit out, boom, it's done. I mean, literally, in an overly simplistic view of the world, some of these items that they are publishing cost them essentially one salaried employee. The JLA Kid Amazo is one of them.
Right.
You just produced that as the comic. You've already got it in the electronic format in the various files. Provided you store those in some halfway coherent and understandable structure of, you know, to where somebody can find them, you literally have somebody working in the production department on a salary being told, okay, whenever a certain folder gets full and there's enough, when the story's completed, package that up to where it's ready to go out, be it as a trade or a hardcover, whatever. Take one of the covers, you know, tweak it just enough to put the right, you know, text pieces on it to where it's the hardcover versus the comic or whatever. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, since all the production side of it's pretty much done other than the cover or whatever, and all you've got to do is string a couple of files together. Again, overly simplistic. I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not saying it's really this simple, but in theory, that JLA Kid Amazo trade paperback took one person, one day in the DC production department to do.
Right.
Why wouldn't they do it? They get the 1,972 copies, boom. That paid for that guy's salary or that lady's salary for the day. Or hopefully much more than that, too. You know
more
what
than
I mean?
That, right?
But, you know, it justified it. That same person could be doing the Manhunter trade paperback, the Shadow Pack trade paperback, the JLA Hypothetical Woman, which I think was also recent stuff in JLA Classified, or at least recent enough. And, let's see, there's got to be some other DC item on the list that would qualify in this kind of thing, although not really. Everything else is either older material. Let's see, Superman Redemption. Yeah, Superman Redemption. That's recent Superman stuff. So, you know, five of the trades or whatever, that's one person, 1 week, on salary, no-brainer. I mean, that's one of the many reasons why they keep cranking out these trades. The other is they can sell.
Right.
You know? This is an incomplete picture in so much as it tells us completely how it sold for the month in Diamond, but we have no clue based on this how it's selling at, you know, at bookstores and things like that. Now, based on some of the information I've been able to sneak a look at on the book scan stuff, the bookstores are not this holy grail promised land that a lot of people seem to think they are.
Right.
Certainly for some titles, some books, they are. It's a great marketplace on average. Certainly it's better than not having it, but it's not going to be doubling, tripling, and doing 10 times what it's doing in the Diamond figures on average. But yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, again, I look at these numbers, and this was another kind of lackluster month. Mm-hmm. The average trade did 2,288 copies. You know, that's negligible.
I mean, is this like Christmas hangover then?
Certainly, I mean, Januarys are not notoriously great months because, you know, a lot of the readers and stuff are a little cash poor paying off the bills.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw this in December, which should have been, in theory, a good month because of the Christmas spending and the holiday spending, that kind of a thing. One thing I heard back from a retailer based on my Advances and Declines article over at Comic Book Resources was that December for him tended not to be a particularly great month because he was having to buy all of that stuff based on the so-so sales from September and October. So, I mean, there is a bit of a cyclical nature to this, and if a retailer, you know, like with this month, they're not going to be bringing in money hand over fist, that limits how much they can be spending on what they're ordering now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only reasonable for them to say, you know, I'm not going to spend more than I make. Whether most retailers do that or not, who knows? So, it was interesting. I'm trying to see, is there anything else particularly exciting this month?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to wrap it up, that's cool.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's, you know,
yeah,
it was an okay month.
Really, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, when only two items do above 5,000 units, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, that really sucks, man. I mean, that's really just bad.
I think it sucks, but I think it sucks because I would like everything to be selling more.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is I think a lot of people may misinterpret when I say that this is disappointing, this is depressing, whatever. I think there's no reason comics should be selling this low.
I just think that having the Hulk, the End, being number four, I mean, I have that book. That's not that great of a book. I don't know why that sold so many copies. I mean, is Peter David and the Hulk really that big of a deal? I mean,
Actually, that I would say yes. This particular story, not so much. Although, did this
The first story, the Future Imperfect story, awful.
Really, I thought it was great.
Really, you liked it? I don't know. I didn't like it. You know what it is? I don't like that Hulk.
But that's fair.
I don't
Peter David,
like
George Perez,
intelligent Bruce Banner Hulk. I thought the Hulk in the End was much better. I like my brooding Hulk. You know, dumb as a rock, you know, just smash everything.
But I mean, I loved Planet Hulk, though. That's my kind of Hulk right there.
Yeah, I thought Future Imperfect was pretty
smart,
good.
He was smart, he was cunning, but yet he's still kind of dumb.
Yeah.
You know, more like Conan the Barbarian dumb from Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, like, he can be smart, but he can be dumb. But yet when the Peter David Hulk, I don't want my Hulk to be funny or witty or kind of look more human than he should. He should look more like a monster.
That's fair.
You know, that's just the way it is.
But, I mean, I thought Future Imperfect was pretty good. The end I thought was okay. I'm not that surprised it went up there. And really, when you talk about the Hulk, Peter David is one of the kind of go-to creators, or certainly writers, for that.
Yes,
and he was on the book for like 10 years.
I know.
And
isn't there a Hulk Visionaries down here somewhere?
Yes, actually there is. It's at rank, where the hell is that?
It's down near the bottom.
68, Hulk Visionaries, Peter David, there. Volume 5, which did just under 1,600 units. And that's opening numbers, too.
Yeah, and that collects his run 364 through 372 and annual number 16 for $20.
That's black and white, right? I don't have any
What's
of
that?
The Visionaries.
Black and white? I don't know if it's black and white.
At that price point, it almost has to be. I'll admit, I have not gotten on board on a lot of these Essentials and Visionaries and stuff like that on the Marvel side.
I don't own any Visionaries.
Yeah, I don't own a single Visionary. I've got a couple of the Essentials, the Uhatmu, the official handbook ones, and I got the Power Man Iron Fist one.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is I just don't have time to be reading these, so that's part of why I haven't gotten whole hog on the Marvel ones. DC, I'm a hardcore DC fan, so of course I'm getting a lot of the showcases. So
yeah, I'm getting the showcases too.
But hopefully, you know, the February stuff will be a little bit more exciting, a little more interesting. Hopefully the sales will be a little higher, just kind of overall. But again, fifth of the list, reorder activity. The thing that's so interesting to me in the dynamic between, you know, analyzing the comics and analyzing the trades is it's just a fundamentally different kind of analysis. Because the comics, so much of it is the big splash when it first is released. Sure, there's some reorder activity, whatever, but usually it only lasts maybe a month or two, unless it's a Civil War or a Buffy or some other huge item. Whereas on the trade, you have kind of the lower opening numbers, but some of these items just keep coming back. Again, Walking Dead's a good example. It's been on the list 38 times before. So it's a much slower, long-term kind of sales trend.
Well, I think February is going to pick up. We've got the Sinestro Corps War Volume 1 coming out. We've got the Lightning Saga hardcover coming out. What else? We have, let's see, we've got a Wolverine Origins Volume 4. Camelot Falls is coming out from Superman. What else?
Well, I would think just between the Lightning Saga what was the other DC one you mentioned at the beginning there?
The Sinestro Corps.
Yeah, the Sinestro Corps Wars. That's how bad my memory is, see? Just between those two, I think it'll make for a reasonably strong month for DC.
Yeah.
Because I really think the Sinestro Corps undersold on the monthly side, and I think a lot of people may be going after it in the collected edition, and that could be, it could be very strong for DC. It may not be, who knows, but I certainly hope it is. It's got that potential, so. And I would hope that a lot of the people who maybe didn't pick up the Lightning Saga but liked the old JLA-JSA team-ups pick that up in the hardcover. Definitely some interesting stuff.
Yeah, and we have another Savage Sword of Conan coming out, Volume 2 from Dark Horse. I'm sure that will rank pretty high.
I'm sure it'll do around the same 6,000-ish or so, but again, it could come in third or fourth place behind those other items.
We get The Boys Volume 2 is coming out, too. That should rank high.
That should do pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, it should do well.
So, cool. That's good, because, you know, when I just think that there's too much coming out on the trades, and I think the sales are being split across too many different items, and few of them really kind of stand out from the crowd as a result. So, and that's just not good. Not horrible either, but that kind of a market favors the online retailer over the brick and mortar stores.
Right.
Because it's easier for an Amazon or an in-stock trades to essentially, quote unquote, carry everything, whereas your local comic book store, no matter how big of a selection they've got, there's going to be things they just don't have. So
cool, man.
Actually, yes, there is something I want you to hype for you.
Okay.
And that's your new stuff with Tomorrows.
That's right. I'm the new host of the Tomorrows podcast, which we had our first episode come out on March 1st, and we're probably going to be doing one a month for now, coming out the first of every month, and it's pretty exciting. I'm pretty happy about it. So
cool.
It's kind of cool that I can actually say that I'm, you know, working for a comic book company, whether it be, you know, it's still freelance, and it's still you know, I'm not on the payroll as such, but it's still pretty cool that I represent a company.
That's awesome.
So
now you're getting paid to podcast now?
I am actually getting paid.
That is awesome. You are so deserving of that. Congratulations.
I'm not getting paid a lot, but
that doesn't matter.
I can say that I'm getting money. I can say I'm a real freelancer, John.
That is awesome.
I'm a podcast freelancer, which not many people can actually say.
That's true. That's true. Well, cool.
Gun for hire.
I'll put it in the show notes for this.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Tomorrows.com with T-W-O Morrows.
Got it. Cool.
Cool.
All right, let's...
What are you doing these days?
Oh, gosh. These days I'm doing all kinds of stuff. By the time this airs, the monthly previews conference call marathon will have long since been over, and I'm sure it'll go for the usual couple hours. Tons of fun. You really ought to join in. That's tomorrow night as of when we're recording, but way in the past by the time I get this edited.
I'm going to a party tomorrow night. I'm going to get drunk.
Okay, good excuse.
Should we plug our little chat with Bob that we're going to have for a comic book page?
That's what we should do. What we're going to do is we're going to do a roundtable discussion where we're going to record that a week from tonight, and hopefully I'll get that edited and up before I leave for Japan. And I'll talk about my Japan trip in a second if you remind me, because I will have forgotten. Mm-hmm. But what the roundtable discussion is going to be is we're going to talk about the modern golden age. This was something you had suggested to Bob and I think it's a brilliant idea. There's the 12, there's Project Superpower, there's JSA. There's a lot of, in some cases obscure, in some cases not so obscure, golden age characters that are really making a comeback these days. And we're going to take a look at how some of the various companies, you know, Marvel, DC, and I guess Dynamite.
And Image for a little bit.
Actually, I haven't found a copy of Fantastic Comics 24.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
That's one that I think still counts as obscure.
It's very obscure.
If I can get a copy, I will. But talking about how the various companies are either, you know, leveraging their past or strip mining their past or, you know, whatever we decide, but how they're taking some of their older characters and trying to do stuff with them today. I think that'll make for a fascinating discussion. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I'm a huge fan of the JSA, and I've purposefully held off on reading Project Superpower and the second issue of the 12 until it's closer to that discussion, to where it's fresh in my mind, to where I'm not sitting there thinking, yeah, I read it, I don't remember it, which I do all too often. So I got that. The February numbers should be out, like I was saying earlier, in about a week. Still doing the weekly comic spotlight with Bob. That's a lot of fun. That's going pretty well. But then also, I'm going to be spending about a week and a half, in Japan at the end of the month. So I'm going to go visit some family there, hopefully get some first-hand experience on this manga thing. So anyone who's listening who thinks I don't know enough about manga, one, you are entirely correct. Two, email me at mayoreport@comicbookpage. Give me advice. I'm going to be staying in Kobe for a little bit. I'm going to have some time to go do some shopping. Let me know where a good manga store is. Let me know where a good place to get stuff on the Super Sentai is over in Japan. I'm going for the authentic manga. In other words, not only Japanese comics, but in Japan, specifically in Kobe. Help me out here, guys. I certainly want to get a good feel for what the manga culture is like natively in Japan. I think that'll give me a good grounding on some sort of the cultural differences between there and here. So seriously, if anyone knows of some good resources, some things I should do, and I've got a little bit of spare time in Kobe, I would greatly appreciate that. I'm really looking forward to the trip, and it should be a lot of fun. But I'm gonna take off probably like the day after the February numbers come out potentially, and be gone for about a week and a half. So it'll probably be sometime maybe the second week of April by the time we talk about the February numbers, or at least by the time that episode gets released.
All right.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied.
Anywhere from all the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales, any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is voiding the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.